Welcome back to the Rusted Culture Podcast, everybody. I'm Frank Ebersold. And have you ever had the feeling, folks, that maybe
we're on the road to nowhere. Come on inside.
I've got this nagging feeling that we're on the road to nowhere, folks. You know, have you ever heard this one saying, and I'm sure you have, that something is rotten in the state of Denmark? Of course, it's a famous line from Shakespeare's Hamlet. But folks, there's something rotten in the White House right now. It's rotten. And we're going to talk about it. Seriously, there's something that's not right. Just today, between today and yesterday, Iraq's parliament, the first thing that triggered this thing off, this thought pattern that I've got, the first thing that triggered this was that Iraq's parliament on Sunday voted to expel U.S. troops from Iraq following the assassination of Major General Soleimani in a drone strike, as we all know. The second thing that happened that was a little bit unusual was U.S. Marine Corps Brigadier General William Seely, who is in fact the commanding general of U.S. Task Force Iraq, wrote a letter to the Iraqi Prime Minister that basically read, "Sir, in deference to the sovereignty of the Republic of Iraq, and as requested by the Iraqi Parliament and the Prime Minister, the U.S. will be repositioning forces over the course of the coming days and weeks to prepare for onward movement." And basically what he's saying there is that we will be preparing to withdraw from Iraq. And this is the Brigadier General of Iraq that's saying this. This is the man that is in control of U.S. forces in Iraq that's saying this. And then the third point, then from the White House, Joint Chiefs of Staff Chairman Mark Milley said yesterday that the letter was a draft. It was never supposed to be released. It was a draft. And at the same time, yesterday we had Defense Secretary Mark Esper also said on Monday that there's been no decision for the U.S. to leave Iraq. Folks, there's something rotten in the White House about this. First of all, a brigadier general in control of U.S. forces in Iraq doesn't make mistakes. No, he does not make mistakes. And what I think that we're seeing here is basically the implosion of the U.S. policy in Iraq brought on by President Trump. Trump's whiz-bang decision to assassinate a top Iran general has left the U.S. at huge risk in the region. Basically, that quick decision to take that general out has left the U.S. at a huge risk in the region. And Brigadier General Seely was simply acknowledging that scenario. In a way, he was acknowledging the impulsiveness of Donald Trump. The chaos of the White House has put our troops in that region in harm's way with one simple action. No, the letter didn't state that. And it is a hunch, but that's the feeling that I'm getting from this. And, you know, folks, our presence, as you well know, our presence in Iraq began in 2003 in a U.S.-led coalition where then-President George Bush and U.K. Prime Minister Tony Blair stated together that the coalition's aim was to disarm Iraq of weapons of mass destruction, to end Saddam Hussein's support for terrorism, and to free the Iraqi people. Now, contrast that, if you will. Contrast that statement from 2003 to today, where the Iraqi parliament voted on Sunday as a sovereign country too, voted as a sovereign country to have the U.S. leave Iraq. That is monumental, folks. That is monumental. That is a failed policy that basically was culminated in one act by Donald Trump that threw everything America has done in Iraq for the past 17 years into chaos. That letter by Brigadier General Seeley to leave Iraq wasn't a mistake. It was an admission to a failed Iraq policy, accentuated by Donald Trump's killing of General Soleimani. Now, Soleimani, as we know, he was no angel. But as one leaves, another takes their place. I suspect, folks, that if Trump had asked Brigadier General Mark Seeley what he would do, it would not have been to assassinate Soleimani at that point, if at all. Just tonight, Donald Trump is drafting sanctions against Iraq after publicly threatening the country with economic penalties if it proceeds to expel U.S. troops. Sanctions. So, what an unusual situation. And here we stand, America, from George Bush saying back in 2003 that he wanted to liberate the Iraqi people, to today President Trump promising to hit Iraq with heavy sanctions. What in the hell is going on? My friends, this is what chaos looks like. This is the face of chaos. And quite honestly, I fear for America and the leadership that we have at this point. But what can we be thankful for? And I've said this again in the past. What we can be thankful for is that the president doesn't have a full run of the political table and that the House is out of his control. He does not control the House. And given the current cult of Trump status that some lawmakers like Lindsey Graham, Senator Lindsey Graham, where literally Trump can do no wrong. In times like these, where we have some real questions as to why Trump is making the decisions he is making that genuinely are increasing the overall terror and war threat to Americans, both here and abroad, given these questions, along with the ones that many of us have had for years about his temperament and overall handle on reality, given all of that, I'm happy that Donald Trump doesn't have the House of Representatives in the palm of his hands, like he has the Senate sitting in the palm of his hand. Because of this, folks, because the House is not in the control of Donald Trump, we can expect the House to continue to be the voice of reason. And it's one heck of an argument here for not giving Donald Trump unbridled control. So folks, let's look back a little bit. Here's what happened this week back in 1943. Our president at the time, Franklin Delano Roosevelt, was meeting with British Prime Minister Winston Churchill at Casablanca in Morocco to work on the World War II ending strategy, if you will. They met on January 14th through the 23rd in 1943. At the conclusion of that conference, Roosevelt and Churchill held a joint news conference during which Roosevelt announced that peace would come only by the total elimination of German and Japanese war power. In other words, the unconditional surrender of Germany, Italy, and Japan. The fact is, folks, and let's let history be our guide. It's easy to start a war, but it's hell to end a war. And it wasn't until August 6th of 1945 when then-President Harry S. Truman dropped the first atomic bomb that basically ended World War II. And you know, there is a time for war, but given the way this situation with Iran has escalated, as I discussed in my last podcast, do you really think that now is that time for the war that we should have with Iran? Is now the time? And here's something else that happened during this early January time frame, back on January 1st of 1942. 26 countries met with resolve and signed the Declaration of the United Nations in Washington, D.C., affirming opposition to the Axis powers and confirming that no single nation would make separate peace. You see, back then, folks, there was a clearly defined united, we nations stand together, and divided, we nations fall together. That was the approach that they had to facing the big issues of the day, at that time, World War II. So where is our administration's outreach like that today? Where is the consensus that he's forming with other countries? And I don't mean on the general strike of Soleimani, but where is the consensus in the approach that was so important to us in the years during World War II and since World War II, that we would form a consensus before taking action and we would have a unified approach? Where is that outreach today? Instead of working with our allies on issues like Iran, Trump is taking an isolationist approach, and it's dangerous. It's a dangerous approach. In fact, Donald Trump, according to the New York Times, who spoke with senior administration officials over the course of 2018, Donald Trump privately said he wanted to withdraw from NATO. So here we are, folks, with an isolationist president, dangerous isolationist policy, and no channels of communication or diplomacy open between Iran and Iraq, or excuse me, between Iran today. There's basically nothing but tweets that they can look at, if you can call that a diplomatic channel. And anybody who may have pushed back on some of the impulsive nature that Donald Trump had, I'm talking about Gary Cohn, General Kelly, or General Mattis, they're all gone. They're gone. And there's nobody but yes men around the president today. And where are we in the state of affairs where diplomatically the only channel that we have is the president's Twitter feed, and we know how volatile and combustible and vitriol that can be? We should all be concerned. We should all be expressing that concern to your elected senator or congressman or congresswoman. Don't sit back, folks. Make your voice heard. After all, these elected officials, they don't work for Donald Trump. They work for you, Democrat and Republican. And while you're pressuring your legislators in Washington to open diplomatic ties, or perhaps stress what you think should be done in Iraq and maybe a more cautious approach, you can add this to the mix. Senator Chuck Schumer said that there's a decent chance, and he just said this a couple of days ago, that four Republican senators will join with Democrats in making this impeachment trial a fair process. And you've heard me talk about this on previous podcasts. If 51 senators make a motion to compel witnesses and demand documents, it will happen. And just today, John Bolton, former Trump national security advisor, said he is willing to testify given a subpoena. So why would anyone want the Senate to do anything other than to hear that testimony? Whether you're a Democrat, Republican, or anything else in the middle, We did not elect these people to hold anything but a fair impeachment process. And I think it was just yesterday, Senator Lindsey Graham suggested changing the Senate rules so that the Senate could hold the constitutionally mandated trial without the articles of impeachment from Nancy Pelosi. Change the rules so they could make this trial just go away without any witnesses or documents being brought forth. And keep in mind, folks, the only reason why more documents and witnesses weren't called in the House was because Donald Trump just simply wouldn't allow him to testify. And he wouldn't allow the documents to be tendered to the House of Representatives. So if Donald Trump doesn't have to follow the laws of this nation, you could ask yourself, why should anyone else follow the laws of this nation? And that's a problem, obviously. So stay right there, folks. We're going to kind of go into some other news here. We've got some interesting stuff to talk about. So hang right in there. We're on the road to nowhere. Come on inside. Taking that ride to nowhere. We'll take that ride. And folks, that's actually a good rendition of the Talking Heads song from way, way back. Many of you will know that. But this is by a band called The School Is Cool, which is a Dutch band, and they recorded this way back in 2012, and I'm not sure what happened to the band since then, but actually a pretty good lead singer, if I do say so myself. So here's the interesting thing about this. You remember Congressman Duncan Hunter of California, don't you? Duncan Hunter. You remember him? He was in the news, and he's in the news again, actually. This is the San Diego Tribune. You'll recall that Duncan Hunter, Congressman Hunter, was indicted back in August of 2018 on 60 federal charges that he stole $250,000 of campaign money, and he used it for family vacations, groceries, extramarital affairs, of course, why not, and other non-campaign issues or uses dating back to at least 2010. $250,000. It's quite a good chunk of money. Well, according to the San Diego Tribune, Duncan Hunter will likely receive his taxpayer-funded congressional pension despite guilty plea. Doesn't that just make your day? So last month, according to this article, Representative Duncan Hunter pled guilty to felony conspiracy for converting campaign funds to personal use, but that doesn't mean taxpayers will be off the hook for supporting the congressman after he retires. Duncan Hunter, a Republican who was sworn into office on January 3rd of 2009, has garnered at least 11 years of service that counts toward the congressional portion of his pension, meaning he'll still likely receive thousands of dollars in retirement benefits related to that service, in addition to benefits from prior military service. And even to this day, quite comically, Representative Hunter remains in Congress, although he said he would step down shortly after the holidays. Okay, we're waiting. He's going to be sentenced on March 17th, and based on formulas outlined in a paper released by the research service earlier this year, it's estimated that Hunter, who is 43, would receive an annual payment of at least $32,538 due to his congressional pension, which he can begin accessing when he turns 62. And I quote, I do not have any information to provide regarding Congressman Hunter's personal finances, including the status of his retirement pension, said Michael Harrison, a spokesman for Hunter. Legal and policy experts interviewed by the Union Tribune said Hunter will most likely keep his taxpayer-funded pension, even though he violated the public's trust. And folks, just so you know, no members of Congress have been stripped of their retirement benefits due to a conviction. Isn't that kind of interesting? That means they were all angels. They've never done anything wrong. And Unfortunately, I have to say that the wrongdoing actually is on both sides, both Democrats and Republicans. And the San Diego Tribune lists former Representative Corrine Brown, who was a Florida Democrat, convicted on 18 of 22 corruption charges, including mail fraud and filing a false federal tax return in 2017, is still collecting pension benefits from prison. God. Just slide them under the bars. I'll take those checks under the bar, please. And as is another former Pennsylvania Representative Chaka Fada, who escapes my memory, but was convicted on 23 counts of racketeering, fraud, and other corruption charges way back in 2016. And let's not forget former San Diego Representative Randy Duke Cunningham, a 78-year-old Republican who was convicted on federal charges of tax evasion and conspiracy to commit bribery, mail fraud, and wire fraud all the way back in 2005, is also still eligible, or he's currently receiving his congressional pension today. And according to this article, legal and policy experts said that Hunter is unlikely to be the first member of Congress to have his congressional retirement benefits stripped away because, while conspiracy is among one of the crimes that can cause lawmakers to lose their pension, the law only covers conspiracy to commit 29 specific types of acts, and all of them relate to conduct as an office holder or involving the federal government, federal employees, or public property. And since Hunter's conspiracy crime was related to campaign finance activity, that is not one of the specified types of acts that qualifies for him losing his pension. He pleaded to a single felony, but not one that is specifically included in the Honest Leadership and Open Government Act. According to Beth Rotman, who's an attorney with the Money in Politics and Ethics Program Director for Good Government Group Common Cause. Well, the fear not here, folks, the guilty pleas on Duncan Hunter's behalf that he's putting in could still cost the Hunters if their sentences include the maximum $250,000 fine, for example, or if they did not declare his income on tax returns, the $150,000 to $200,000 they've admitted to using for personal expenses, and if the IRS comes calling back to collect back taxes, that might not be good either. So, you know, it just never ends, does it? I mean, Duncan, why is he still there? It's just unfathomable. Get rid of him, for God's sakes. Get him out of there. I mean, God. Well, folks, you know, just as a reminder that Trump's tax cuts have benefited some of the most fortunate and profitable companies out there. Here's one from a story now where Chevron has made $4.5 billion in 2018. Made $4.5 billion, so why did the IRS give them a tax refund? Again, insensible. I mean, you can't tell me that the system's not rigged. You can't tell me that it's not stilted towards the wealthy. And you can't run a country on zero taxes. And you can't run a country on a tax refund when a company's made $4.5 billion. So this report singled out Chevron for having benefited generously from the new tax code, thank you, Donald Trump, despite a U.S. pre-tax income of $4.5 billion, which would mean a new corporate tax rate of $954 million, or a mere $162 million if taxed on the average rate of other oil and gas corporations. Chevron paid about a negative $181 million in taxes. That means that the massive oil company can enjoy and luxuriate in a tax rebate from the IRS of $181 million. You can't tell me there's nothing wrong with that when it happens time and time again. Don't get me started on this. The middle class is suffering, and we all know it. And companies like this continue to profit. The top 1% continue to benefit. It's just ludicrous. That article, by the way, came from Mother Jones. An interesting read about Chevron. So, folks, we know that, these fires in Australia are absolutely abysmal. I mean, horrific, horrific. The loss of human life and the loss of the wildlife is just absolutely heartbreaking. But there is some good news out there in all of this tragedy. And sometimes you have to look for it because, let's face it, you know, I read the news a lot. I'm sure you do, too. As you're listening to this, there's a lot that can depress you out there about the news. There's a hell of a lot of sadness out there. I mean, sad stories are basically aplenty. But in this tragedy, there's an interesting article about the Irwin family. Remember Steve Irwin, the conservationist? They have, his family has basically stepped in, and they've already helped over 90,000 animals, and here's how they're doing it. And according to this article, I'll tell you that bushfires in Australia isn't a phenomenon that's entirely unheard of, it says. However, the 2019 to 2020 Australian bushfire season is something the world has never seen before. Record-breaking heat and drought, lightning strikes, arson, and a lack of hazard reduction are the main causes of the enormous damage that the bushfires have inflicted so far, with the fires still raging. And it's hard to say how long the season that started back in August of 2019 is going to last. With the world's attention on this continent, people have been sending out aid as well as bringing attention to the ongoing problems. Well, here's Bindi Irwin, late Stephen Irwin's daughter. She went on social media to assure everyone that their family is safe and doing everything in their power to help the animals that are in need. The young conservationist posted an image on Instagram together with a caption explaining the situation. She says, "With so many devastating fires within Australia, my heart breaks for the people and wildlife who have lost so much. I wanted to let you know that we are safe. There are no fires near us or near our conservation properties." She goes on to say that our wildlife hospital is busier than ever, though, having officially treated over 90,000 animal patients. "My parents dedicated our Australia Zoo Wildlife Hospital to my beautiful grandmother. We will continue to honor her by being wildlife warriors and saving as many lives as we can." 90,000. And it's just not them. So many people are pulling together in this disaster. People out there are doing good in whatever way they can. Maybe they don't have a lot of money to help in this disaster. Maybe you don't have a lot of money. But here's a story, folks, about the Animal Rescue Craft Guild. And you can find them on Facebook, in fact. It's called the Animal Rescue Craft Guild. And check that out. But what they're doing is kind of interesting. The headline here of the story says that koala mittens and joey pouches, Australian wildfires spark global knitting frenzy. And this just came out today via Reuters. And it basically says that knitting needles are clicking furiously around the world to create hundreds of protective pouches and blankets for native wildlife made homeless by Australian wildfires that have razed large swaths of bushland. The Animal Rescue Craft Guild said on Monday that it has been deluged with offers of help after putting out a call for volunteers to make bat wraps, joey pouches, bird nest, possum boxes, koala mittens, and other snuggly homes for marsupials. So, donations, they say, to this volunteer group have come in as far as the United States, Britain, Hong Kong, France, and Germany. It's been going crazy. Belinda Orellana, a founding member of the guild, told Reuters the response has been amazing. And some experts are estimating put the number of animals, including domestic pets and livestock, killed as high as 500 million, with potentially hundreds of thousands of injured and displaced native wildlife. And I quote here, "It's the poor little souls that survive where we come in," said Orellana. "Our group creates and supplies items to rescue groups and carers around the country who take in and care for the wildlife. Orlana said the Guild supplied thousands of rescue groups around the country and demand was growing, adding there was an urgent need for fabric donations. That's just absolutely amazing. And somebody, some good coming out of this and people pulling together. And they talk about this one lady here whose name is Lara McKay. She's a new volunteer who lives in New Zealand, has just made her first makeshift joy pouch, which she enlisted her cat to test out at home. I'm planning to make as many as possible, and I'm asking fabric outlets for fabric donations to sew. And over in Singapore, somebody named Leslie Koch was working on her fourth joy pouch and meeting up with other volunteers to share materials and tips. I will knit as long as there's a need for the pouches. And just amazing story about something good coming from some of that devastation that's there. Well, this next story actually goes down to Florida. Florida police respond after a parrot cries, "Let me out! Let me out!" This took place pretty close to my old hometown area in Lake Worth Beach, Florida. I'm from West Palm Beach, and this kind of caught my eye because it's, you know, there's some, it's not a zero crime zone, let's face it. So, I mean, when somebody's crying, "Let me out," I mean, my gosh, in this case, it was a parrot, but at least, at least the Floridians are doing the right thing. So, when somebody in a Florida neighborhood heard chilling cries and the words, "Let me out, let me out," they dialed 911. Thank God. Little did they know the cries were that of a 40-year-old parrot. 40 years old, come on. My God, that's getting up there. After the call, four Palm Beach County Sheriff's deputies pulled up and questioned a man who appeared to be repairing a car in his driveway. The Palm Beach Post reports that when the deputies explained their concerns, the man smiled. And then he told deputies he'd introduce them to the perpetrator when he turned with the parrot. The deputies burst out laughing. The man told officers that he taught Rambo to scream, "Let me out," when he was a kid, and Rambo lived in a cage. Taught him that when he was a kid. Can you imagine? The parrot's 40 years old. Well, folks, this is an interesting cap to the podcast. Here's a case of just plain dumber and dumbest. And I read this and I just couldn't believe it. This is coming out today. It's coming to us by way of TV station WLBT in Jackson, Mississippi, where two men were arrested after trying to cash in fake lottery tickets, police said. Flowood police received a call from the Mississippi Lottery Corporation around 9:20 a.m. Monday morning about two men trying to pass a fake lottery ticket. And after speaking with officials, officers learned that the suspects presented a $100,000 winning lottery ticket that had been altered. How did they alter it? Well, of course, they just simply glued the winning numbers on the ticket that matched the prize. I'm surprised they even got that right. The ticket was signed, well, they made sure to sign it, like you're supposed to, on the back. And then it was presented to the commission for payment. So, what do you think that the commission thought when they saw this lottery ticket with the winning numbers pasted on it coming in? Like, what in the hell are they trying to pull? I mean, these people are among us everyday folks, these kind of folks. They've been at we're passing them by in the grocery stores, they're driving by you on the roads. I don't have to tell you this. These dimwits are out there. You've been warned. Well, this one, their two names were Otis Latham, he's 47, and 48-year-old Russell Sparks, both of Columbus, Mississippi, have been charged with conspiracy to commit felony and uttering counterfeit instrument over $1,000. Latham was also charged with false ID information, and the men are comfortably being held at the Rankin County Jail with no bond and are scheduled to appear in court on Tuesday. You just can't make it up. And this certainly would have made a good reality show, wouldn't it, folks? We could have had them report to the courthouse. I can just see it now. We can have them report to the courthouse to claim their winnings. Right, yeah, we'll have them report to the courthouse to claim their winnings. And we'll have Judge Judy standing there smiling and waiting there with a big 3-foot by 5-foot cardboard check that she just takes and smacks them with up and down, saying, "What were you thinking, you idiots? What were you thinking?" My God, it doesn't get any worse than this. Well, folks, these stories just keep on coming, and they kind of temper the political climate that we've got going on. Something to kind of take our mind off of that for a little bit. I want to thank you for joining me again. And of course, we're going to be watching the news. And we'll look for you next time. Till then. Come on inside. Taking that ride.